everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Keatley.
And in this episode, we're deep diving into John Logan's highly polarizing They Slash Them, a slasher film that takes place at a conversion camp. The film drew early criticism on social media, with many wondering if there aren't some topics that should be off limits. But what does that mean for a genre like horror that is predicated on exploring taboo and violating social norms? We're spoiling the hell out of this film, so stay tuned. Okay, so quick recap. A group of kids are sent to a conversion camp in the woods run by none other than Kevin Bacon. At first, the camp counselors talk about inclusion and respect the campers' pronouns before slowly revealing the camp's seedy underbelly. When bodies start piling up, it's up to the campers to save themselves. Okay, y'all, what did you think of They Slash Them?
You know, I feel like it might be useful if, even before we get into our opinions of it, if we speak our truth on what movie first comes to your mind when you saw this film. So what other film?
But I'm a Cheerleader.
That's me too!
Hands down.
Absolutely.
Is that a horror film?
No.
No, but it takes place at a conversion camp.
Oh, okay.
And it's a comedy.
And Liz.
Like a dramedy, I think it's fair to say.
Liz and I have done a podcast on that.
We have. I'll link to that in the show notes.
We may have to do that.
Very good.
But it absolutely really made me think of even some of the scenes sitting around in the rooms, the very stereotypical characters. I think there was just a lot of things in common, yeah.
Yeah, it really hammers home that there's a very fine line between horror and comedy because a lot of the scenes were replicated, but in a different way.
Yeah, the repressed counselors, too. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So many parallels. That might be even a new podcast for us.
Uh-oh, here we go. I'm down for that one. But They Slash Them. Did we love it?
No. And I think that that's worth talking about maybe why.
Yes.
You know, I think
100%.
That we obviously find worth in discussing it. There's a lot of cerebral topics that we can kind of break down in here, some history and a lot of theory. But as far as horror, you don't scare me. So if I'm not scared, I don't love you.
Yeah,
I think Gwen has said that many, many times. So, I knew when we got to, basically we were at like 48 minutes and 30 seconds before, I mean, the scene opens with a very humdrum kill scene.
Oh, I thought it was one of the stronger moments.
Oh, okay.
Oh, dear.
We're going to be fighting over this one. Not a very good kill scene, which I didn't understand until almost the end of the film. The second time I watched it, I missed what was going on in that first scene the first time I watched it. Yeah, but then 48 minutes and 30 seconds later till the next kill scene, and then it just kind of happens really quickly in a compressed period of time, which kind of, you know, makes you ask, what kind of horror film is this exactly? Because it just wasn't scary up until that point.
Well,
or even after that point, actually.
Yeah.
It's definitely not scary. I mean, the opening scene is the one moment where I thought it was scary in the traditional sense of the word, because there was some dread building. There was an attempt to say, hey, this is a horror movie you're watching.
Okay.
There are horrific things that happen in the film, but typical horror, no. Although I think there's a generous reading of this film that what it's trying to do is like flip the heteronormative gaze that's usually in horror films. So you have like the sex scene between Veronica and Kim. You have that awful pink song moment where they're all like jovial before, you know, the impending crisis is coming. But I think ultimately the biggest flaw in this movie is with its killer. And I just can't get past it. There's a major problem with the killer that I think we'll get into, but it's insurmountable for me. So this movie would be a no for me. And I did not watch it a second time because hell no.
Okay. So the big problem for you is the killer. We will definitely have to explore why that is.
I feel like it falls into the category, I don't know if you would call it drawer or hama, but it's more of a drama.
Oh, okay.
That just uses elements of horror. I mean, I feel like there's more suspense and dread and crescendo in a Lifetime movie than than in this. Like, this really just, I think that maybe they thought I can use the idea of conversion camps as a horror because they are, but there's a difference between horror and horrific. And I don't think it was enough. There just really wasn't enough emotional buildup. There wasn't good jump scares. There wasn't enough investment in the killer. Because again, if you're going to have a slasher type movie, we want to know about our killers. We want to know a little bit of their backstory, which we do find out.
Yeah.
But it just, I don't know, felt like a little too short, a little bit too late.
I mean, I was reading some reviews that said that kind of thing. And it's a film that pushes, I think, to its extreme, the whole thing that's been happening in the last decade about horror films that rely on real horrors for their horror, and sort of try to weave horror conventions in with real life horror like racism and Get Out. And you mentioned Black Christmas,
yeah.
2019, Sofia Tikal's film, which is about the horrors of rape and misogynist fraternity culture. And here we have, the gay conversion camp, and all forms of homophobia and transphobia. And so the film relies on real life horror and doesn't quite seem to weave in as effectively as other films the horror conventions. It's almost like the director kind of forgets about it for big chunks of the film. It's like, oh, like near the end, he's like, oh, I'm directing a slasher film here. I need a killer in a mask.
Yeah.
And so like she gets wheeled in like 20 minutes from the end.
Well, I think it's interesting. And this is probably the first time when people will be very upset with me, but I don't like this move to overt political horror. I preferred it when it was subtextual. I'm definitely somebody who thinks that all horror is political.
Yeah.
I can't think of a horror film that isn't political in some way, but I think I love the idea and the theme of this movie, but I want it to be a horror movie that also gets to those same themes.
Yeah.
It felt like I was riding a wave.
Yeah.
It was like, let's catch this moment and try to talk about something that's important, but let's do it really fast. And it just wasn't as well thought out or executed as it could have been.
I 100% agree with what you both just said. And horror films are political, but I felt like this was a political film first and a horror film way second. But also, like, I think it went even further than other political horror movies. Like in Black Christmas, for instance, at the beginning of the film, like one of the sorority sisters is killed. In this film pushes politics so far that you know none of the teenagers at the camp are in any danger.
Like, right.
That's a really good point.
And so that's one of the reasons there's no dread in the film. It's like these characters are here because they're affirming their own identity. They're representing that for the audience. We know they're not going to get killed. Like, this is about self-affirmation for them. And they're like, in this film, they're a protected group. So the horror gets completely separated from them. They're not in danger, ever. And in what slasher film do you have a bunch of young people at a camp and you know they're not in any danger?
Which is interesting, too, then, because it almost treats this group as othered in the horror genre.
Yeah.
Right.
And then on top of it, it's so ironic that in a horror film, this population is way more at risk of violence in the real world than in this film.
And I mean, that was probably intentional because who wants to go into a movie theater and watch a bunch of LGBTQIA+ kids
get slaughtered,
right?
Right.
And we'll get to the, what happened on Twitter, but that was sort of the genesis of the argument on Twitter.
Yeah.
Like, who wants to see that? I wouldn't want to see that.
But we're okay seeing heterosexual teenagers get slaughtered.
I agree.
I mean, what's going on there?
I think because so much real life violence happens towards especially the trans community, that to see that play out in a horror movie for entertainment when numbers are on the rise.
Yeah.
I just think it hits a different way. I mean,
that's the problem when you take real life horrors and put them in a horror film. I mean, by the same token, like at the end of Get Out, nobody wanted to see a real police officer come up and arrest Chris for killing a white person.
Yeah.
Like, no one wanted to see that. And we kind of knew that wouldn't happen, even though that sort of was one of the endings that Jordan Peele planned. It's one of the ways in which real life horrors and like art horror run into each other or have problems together.
I think that it also caused kind of a reverse effect with where your sympathies could lie. Now hear me out. Because I think that with the group of kids, they were so protected and they were so stereotypical that I think sometimes they just became like High School Musical at the horror camp.
Oh, yeah.
And so they became kind of just caricatures. And whereas the counselors, for as crazy and effed up they were, I'm not condoning anything, I almost feel bad for them because they had repressed everything. And they stuffed so much down that they became these disgusting people. And I was like, wow, that is a sick, sad life that you're not living your truth. That I almost ended up being like, wow, what a shame for Kevin Bacon.
I did not have that same experience.
He was a jerk. Like, I'm not saying he's not. He was a raging jerk. But I guess there's that part of me that always looks at the why behind the behavior. Because, again, my natural profession is mental health. And I just think, wow, you know, what got you to this point that you are this person?
But that's the problem with the movie, is that we're asking what got the counselors to that point. And so our sympathy is suddenly being aligned with them instead of the kids, because we know they're never in any real danger. Although I guess that's not entirely true. I'm thinking of Gabriel.
He's not really, he's more like one of the counselors, isn't he? He's sort of a plant.
So I know Gabriel's a plant, but I also wondered if he wasn't a former student that had just sort of gotten subsumed into that.
Well, so were Zane and Sarah.
Right, right.
I assume he is because he uses their language. He was like, are you a predator or a prey? I know what I am.
Yeah.
So it sounds like he just figured out, all right, well, if I'm going to get by, I'm going to have some agency here, but however limited, and I'm going to make my... So he did sound like he had grown up through the camp.
Yeah.
So... I mean, one thing we're saying here, and I read this in a review too, I thought this was really interesting. In Spectrum, the review complained that the teenagers are simplistic and completely sure of their identities, which is somewhat unusual for young people, and that the film backs away, this is a quote, the film backs away from every uncomfortable possibility of three-dimensionality, which I thought that was really interesting. But I think what we're saying is that the counselors actually are kind of three-dimensional. Like they have layers, you know, things that are repressed. Whereas the teenagers, the campers, do seem very much like one thing, simplistic, even a caricature.
And it's such a strange decision because they really had an opportunity to do something interesting with a final person in Jordan.
Yeah. Which...
And they completely miss the mark because everybody survives.
So Jordan can't be the final person because everyone survives?
I don't think Jordan can be. I think they are part of the group, like a strong fundamental part of the group. But really, I don't think they served any more purpose than Alexandra.
Alexandra?
Yeah.
I loved Alexandra.
Yeah, I did too. And... to me, it seems like Alexandra and Jordan both functioned to sort of save the day in a way. So there was no final person. And that would have been cool to see.
Black Christmas was like that, too. You know, at the end when all of the sorority sisters join together and defeat the fraternity brothers, they all seem to survive. There's no final person.
Yeah.
But is that a problem or is that just an evolution of the slasher? Like we're moving away from the single final girl to, or final boy, final person, to the group, the collective.
I guess it comes down to, are you a fan of the traditional hero villain? So, you know, Batman, Spider-Man, or do you like the groups? So Fantastic Four, X-Men. I mean, the recipe's there still if they actually develop the characters, I guess. I could probably handle a collective, which is also a great idea. Let's build a community. Let's all fight back because, you know, it's not just one of us. We have power together instead of, you know, the age old, let's all just separate like in Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
But I guess you just still got to develop it for me to care that you did it collectively.
And then the question is, Liz said, what do you want in a slasher, or even what is a slasher? Like when you have an entire group coming together to affirm their sense of self and their community, are we in the realm of the slasher anymore?
And what does it even say about identity politics and, you know, inclusion and exclusion too? By being inclusive, did they become exclusive?
Yeah.
Which I might not want to touch with a 10-foot pole.
There is something interesting. I mean, in terms of the collective, all the kids and the slasher conventions, I mean, the slasher was built on gender confusion, right? Like the killer is notoriously, I mean, Carol Clover said that, yeah. You know, it's a male in gender distress. It's about gender confusion.
An androgynous final female.
And the final girl is kind of androgynous. So she's a little gender ambiguous. I mean, I think what this film wanted to show is that these kids knew exactly who they were, like gender and sexuality wise. And they just had to learn to affirm it more loudly. So again, that's great. But is that an evolution of the slasher, or are we just moving? Like, is the slasher not relevant anymore? Like,
and then what does it say, too, about restoring normalcy at the end? They still ended up kind of with this heteronormative pairing because you had Alexandra and Jordan.
Right. Yeah.
So that outwardly, as well as, you know, identification, it still kind of seems like this typical pairing. And I guess we can think we turned it on its head. But did we? I don't know.
There were three typical pairings. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was Veronica and Kim at the end. And, you know, Veronica says to Kim, what are you going to tell your parents? And Kim sort of lays her head on Veronica's arm and says, we'll tell them. And then Toby goes off with Stuart in the ambulance, like, after having said he's Stuart's fiance. And then at the end, he's like, yes, I'm family. So there's, like, three pairings.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not by in any way heteronormative, but they are coupling. People couple off at the end. I hadn't really thought about that.
I mean, I think about Alexandra at the end. She kind of became the mother, which is not that different than, you know, you see something like Pose and you develop your own new family and you have like a house mother. And, you know, she kind of steps up and take that role. But then it was interesting that it was paired. You had Jordan, who then is like, all right, you take the kids and I'll go and get the bad guy. And the gun. We are going to do this. Yeah. And, you know, it just felt replicated.
I mean, the killer's fascinating. Maybe we should talk about the killer.
Well, can we start by saying that I think if you grew up in a certain era and watched My Girl, you knew who the killer was from the jump.
Hands down.
Right? This is Scream 2 all over again. Laurie Metcalf. Yeah. You know, because whenever you see somebody who you're like, why would they take a role that's this diminished? That's your killer. So that wasn't cool. But yeah, what did you guys think about the killer?
I think you've had more thoughts about her than I did, but it was too rushed. And Gwen, you said something like this earlier, I think. I mean, I didn't see My Girl in the late 80s, 90s, so I didn't know the killer was. So it, you know, I suddenly realized, and boom, the film was over. Like, I just didn't think she was developed enough.
So for me, there's like a really troubling through line that I actually made notes about this because I was surprised that the film went this way. But so we know Molly is really Angie, and she's a former camper, and I'm using that in quotation marks. And we know she's been brutalized. It's really clear that she has PTSD, right? And I kept thinking of the Kill Bill movie where Bud says, you know, she's earned her revenge.
Okay.
And so I was already predisposed to think, okay, yeah, I understand why she's killing these people.
Sure. Yeah.
We saw Stu, right, get tortured via aversion therapy when he was repeatedly shocked. And it's a really long scene. And it really, I think for a show that, or for a movie that's not about horror, that is one of the more horrific moments, is you really see the pain that's associated with that process. It comes on the heels of him being betrayed by his bunkmate, Gabriel, and who it's revealed works for the camp. I think we mentioned that. So fast forward to when our killer is in full rampage and Gabriel gets electrocuted to death. Okay, so what we're seeing basically is a killer who's LGBTQIA+, using violence against another member of her same community. Like, that's where the most overt violence of the film resides, is by having two people within the community basically, like, fight each other.
Absolutely. And I think also, too, it doesn't do much for the stereotype. I mean, it's been since the talkies.
Right.
The lesbian's always the killer. So, and then you have Jordan that comes in and is like, I choose not to.
But what does that say about community, right? This is supposed to be a movie that celebrates community. And the reason they survive is because they work as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
well, you didn't work as a unit because you left a damaged member of your community out in the cold and decided to take the quote unquote moral high ground and say, well, I'm choosing something different and I'm going to turn you over to the police. Knowing that her actions are really probably what saved your own bacon, right? Because if Molly hadn't killed these counselors, we saw the pictures of the abuse.
Yeah.
All of these kids were going to suffer greatly. I mean, we already saw psychological torture, and it was just escalating.
Oh, yeah, from Cora.
Yeah. Well, that and also the scene with the dog, which I could have done without.
Yeah.
Well, what would you have had Jordan do? I mean, I definitely see your point. Like, you know, Molly, nurse/Angie, the killer, she is clearly traumatized, and she's actually clearly enacting her revenge against people who were similarly traumatized, we have to assume, at the camp, like Gabriel. And also, you didn't mention this, but she axes Zane and Sarah, the athletics and activities director, who were also campers and who also have gone through aversion therapy. You can tell from this sex scene when they get killed. So, and also Cora, who, like, Cora, the psychiatrist, does this thing where she's talking to Jordan and it's almost like she too wishes she had been a boy when she was younger but was unable to ever sort of act on that. So I think all of the people that Angela kills are damaged by gay conversion therapy and the phobic attitudes behind that, right?
Definitely, but I think they're the ones who are perpetuating harm against the community, and our killer is not perpetuating that harm. And you ask what I would want to see at the end.
With Jordan at the end.
Right. Like, so we watch the killer just get put in a police car and sort of driven off.
Yeah.
I think a much stronger statement would have been to have the community surround the killer and go with her in the cop car to show that even those most damaged members of your community, you stand with. And that, to me, I mean, if we're going to have a social justice horror film.
Okay.
Then I want it.
I'm glad you said that.
I think out of the three of us, I'm more.
Would they be singing Kumbaya when they all?
No, but I'm just saying. Stand with people. Damn.
No, I'm going to give you the real answer. If I was making a political movie, that's a fantastic answer. If I'm making a horror movie that happens to have elements of politics in it, Jordan's going to walk up, shoot the MF-er, and be like, I got you, boo. Let's go. Done.
Oh, I'm down with that. But that's not the movie that we were given. We were not given a horror movie.
We absolutely were not.
I mean, that would have brought it back to a horror movie.
Because that would be that moment that you stand up in the theater and you're like, yes!
Well, like if Jordan had beheaded her, like Mrs. Voorhees at the end of Friday the 13th.
Yeah. And you can still be political about it, though. You can, you know, chop a head off and be like, I'm sorry this happened to you. But you gotta go. But I also don't like, you know what? Again, the experience of conversion is damaging, but these characters were so one-dimensional, like damaged goods. Like, I don't know, it really packaged some of the older camp counselors that have gone through this as damaged goods. And then you have my girl, damaged goods. And you know what? It's not them. It's what they were put through.
Well, I do think that comes through in the movie, that it's not
when
them.
They kill them all.
Well, I agree that. I don't think you're ever set up to sort of align with the people running the camp.
Well, but to the extent that you do have some sympathy with them, that actually fits within horror conventions. I mean, sympathy with the monster.
And I guess it's too, you know, you got to have, especially if you're in the movement, like some respect for people that came before. And maybe this is just also a representation of new generation versus old and not having any understanding of the work, the fight, the problems, and just saying, hey, you know what? We're calling the shots now.
Yeah, that's a great point.
The
generational point is a really good one, because the young campers are all really able to say who they are. Mm-hmm. You know, the film is about the struggle for them, liking themselves, speaking their own truths and all of that. But they don't seem to have to do much work on that. Like, they're kind of there. And then you have this older generation that is just crippled by the effort to conform to heteronormativity and being forced to conform.
Yeah. And by these children don't understand their own history. Yeah. Again, too, like, think about it. It was in our family's lifetime that you would be arrested and thrown into jail for wearing an article of clothing from the opposite sex.
People don't know that.
No, they don't. So, again, if you want to get political, know your history. Just saying.
Somebody promised that we'd be talking about history at some point. There we go. We did it. Though the older characters, with the exception of Kevin Bacon, weren't actually that old. But, you know, things have changed quickly. So
this is true.
Not that far away history.
So one thing that did come up on Twitter. So I was primed to see a very different movie than the one that we got, because before the movie dropped, there was a lot of conversation on Twitter about whether or not it's appropriate to have a horror film set in a conversion camp, because obviously this is an horrific thing that people really go through. And a lot of survivors of that experience were saying, you know, what I endured, it's not fodder for your entertainment. And I wondered how you feel about that. Are there topics that you think should be off the table?
I don't think topics should be off the table. I think how you handle them should be off the table. Because again, I'm a firm believer, we all have a choice. You watch it or you don't. You can write, you have this freedom that you can write that blog piece. And I respect it. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's a piece of time. And again, there is some use in it. I understand your pain and your hurt and what you've gone through, and I can't even fathom. But there's also people out there in this world that have no idea that conversion camps even exist.
Right.
So it's a tough call. I don't think it should be off the table, though. Because I think rape's pretty horrific, but it's in, like, every horror film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Black Christmas was predicated on, you know, the rape of the main character, just like this is sort of predicated on the horrors of conversion camps. We have the horrors of racism and Get Out. People are taking that up. I mean, Noel Carroll, I remember, like, very famously said there's a big difference between, like, natural horror and art horror.
Yeah.
But he was writing about films mostly from the pre-70s and early 70s, and we really seem to be dipping into real horrors for art horror now.
So another part on Twitter that I found interesting was that with these conversations, there was a spread of misinformation. And so I went into the movie expecting what I had read to be true. And what that was that they were saying that They Slash Them was a movie where, just using their words, the queer characters were slashed and stalked. And that it was just basically a film that you just watched massive suffering.
No. I never felt like the campers were victims. I mean, they were in this protected space that was almost another genre. Like, they were living in another genre of film. It's not until right at the end, I think Kim and Veronica walk into some dining hall and see the four victims thus far, none of whom are campers. And, you know, that's when their particular horror starts, and it's over in about 5 minutes. So they just never feel like they're in danger to me. But the counselors are queer characters, in my view. Like, the characters who are killed are, like, Zane and Sarah and Gabriel, at least. The caretaker, no idea why he was in there. Y'all will have to explain the caretaker.
Because there's always got to be a caretaker.
A pervy caretaker who's spying on.
He reminded me of the guy in the library of Harry Potter. Such an awkward, weird old guy. Maybe it was also to set it into opposition of your stereotypical white straight guy. I don't know.
Was he straight? Like, there was the one scene when he was watching kids through the camera.
Oh, he's watching all the girls. Yeah, it was all the girls.
So he is straight.
It looked like a locker room.
Okay.
Like, he had, you know, a camera set up in the showers. And it's like it was nice that they seemed to purposely take this traditionally person of privilege just by his, you know, his skin color and possibly his socioeconomic standing or, you know, his ability to work. I don't know. But then they just kind of turned him on his head and made him the weirdest guy in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's the one responsible for outing Alexandra, wasn't he?
No, that was
Sarah?
Yeah, Sarah, the activities director.
I thought the shower there. I don't know.
I thought Sarah got sort of the heads up from the caretaker, but I could be wrong.
No, because Alexandra was showering by herself.
Oh, okay.
Early in the morning. And he was watching, I think it was girls at some other time.
So I think, too, it's also difficult to talk about this. Do you think that this film did a good job of, if they're trying to be political and make a statement, of actually making this about gender identity or sexuality? Because they're not the same.
No.
And I think that people also need to remember that. That's a pretty core difference.
Well, there's a lot of education that needed to be front-loaded in this film that I don't think was. Yeah. And so if you go into this movie and you understand things like pronouns and you understand things like gender performance versus gender identity, cisgender, all the terminology.
Or queer, which was more of a political kind of.
Yes, and which is a term I no longer use.
Yeah. I was going to say that's got its own history.
It also wasn't used in the film either, except in when Jordan says, like, you know, I'd be less uncomfortable with this camp if there was queer bashing.
Yeah.
I think that's the only time it comes up. So,
which is surprising.
It's not a self, like, no one self-identifies themselves that way.
Yeah.
But I think for the movie to have impact, maybe they did need to front load a little of those. I don't know how you would have done that, though, without it being just
it seems
an
like
information
they tried
drop.
To preach to a choir, but I don't know if they had the choir. Like, they made some assumptions that people really understood. If you don't do that front loading, if you think your audience knows enough about all of this stuff, then they're literally just going to look at this film and say it was a sucky horror movie because there was no jump scares, there was no dread, and it was a horrible killer. She's my girl.
I kind of like the fact that I feel like every one of the kids that was featured, I mean, there was a whole group of sort of faceless, nameless kids.
Oh, when they fat shame, because they don't talk about the big kids.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is a horrible thing.
That's true.
That was in my notes.
Mm-hmm. Do they even have names? I don't know.
Yeah, no, they don't
They
even have
sure
names.
Don't. Yeah. They sure don't.
Yeah, no, all our main characters were attractive and slim. But I feel like they all had their own place on the spectrum and the point of the movie seemed to be anti-labels in some way and just like embracing your own particular identity. So to sort of go through like a kind of dictionary of this means this and this means that would have been a little counterproductive. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know. That's such an interesting question. Like, does the film get us to move beyond labels? Because I think
it's trying to, isn't it?
You think so? I don't know. I think it's trying to say that there's value in having labels because it creates community.
It seemed to me like it was really opposed to labels.
I don't feel like it really built that much of a community because what does it say that as soon as they all got a piece of ass, they didn't care about the rest of the kids?
No, I think they did. I mean, you got the community building during the pink moment of the song where they're all frolicking.
Yeah.
And I think that was supposed to be sort of the nod toward, this is a group entity instead of just our final person.
I think if they were trying to slosh off labels, too, they would have made it more about in this kind of confession moment. It's less about my sexuality, my identity. And it's because we all hate being here because our parents are making us come. That would have felt a little bit more, I don't know.
But I think in Jordan, you really do get an understanding that labels matter, right? There's the moment where they're being told to go to one side of the camp or not, the girls or the boys.
But that's an anti-label moment, isn't it?
I don't know, because that's their label. They're saying my pronouns are they, them. I don't fit into this binary.
Yeah.
They just picked one real quick. Like, but I feel like if you're really trying to literally name your film after they, them, Jordan really just was kind of like, oh, so I only have two choices, and if it's not working out, I can use another cabin, which I didn't. What does that say? Maybe they found enough community, so there could be that argument, but they kind of rolled over real quick on that one. And then also let me, throughout the film, wholeheartedly embrace all of the masculine components that you're making me embrace. Like, at the end of the day, they embraced every single one of them. I feel like the only rejection of that is when Jordan put the dress on. And it was almost comical.
I think, too, after Jordan shoots the dog, their reaction is definitely not stereotypical male aggression. Look at, like, I just killed this thing. I'm, you know.
They threw the gun away.
I'm the massive predator, right? And instead had an emotional, visceral reaction that wouldn't, I don't think, traditionally be defined as masculine.
I don't know, because I feel like most men, I don't want to, like, man shame. Most men don't want to shoot their dying dog. It would be different if it was a deer.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Wait, what?
No. I'm saying I feel like most men, if they are hunters, are conditioned to kind of depersonalize something that I'm going to, you know, hunt and fully appreciate and eat. Again, I'm not a hunter, but you know what? Hey, you know what? If you're going to use all of it, that's great. So they almost depersonalize that. Whereas I think any good man is really going to, if they were forced into that same exact situation to shoot somebody's dog in the head, might actually shed a tear later, not in front of other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think cultural norm wise, we still live in a time where masculinity equates to not showing emotion.
I agree with that.
And I think, like Dawn said, like the act of throwing away the gun felt to me as like a rejection of that traditional masculinity.
Felt infantile.
You thought so?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was powerful because they weren't going to be boxed in.
It felt like
to a particular identity.
Fine, I did it there. Now I'm going to my room.
Oh, we have totally different readings of that scene.
We had definitely different readings of the counselors too. I mean, that's what makes this amazing.
Totally.
So maybe it is a little more complex than we thought. But I mean, I read that scene that Jordan wanted to be free to be able to be a good Marks person, as they said. So that's part of where I thought the film was being kind of anti-label. Like, Jordan wanted to be good with a gun without being called a man, or without being masculine, or without being Owen's, like, killer. Can you escape anything that's coded as masculine or feminine? I mean, you really can't. It's about how you embody them, I guess, and what they mean to you, and how whether you are just adopting them or whether you're confined by them.
I think there could be an argument that it's more about the fluidity of being able to move between the two.
Exactly. Which they were trying to do with Jordan with the dress. They were sitting on top of this large fence.
Yeah.
In the dress. And I thought it was interesting that they were sort of straddling the fence, like not on one side, not on the other. Sort of like, I'm going to be sort of fluid in between.
Now, there's some subtext.
Yeah.
I like that.
I don't know. I don't know if it does enough to expand. Because, again, you know, sometimes these binaries are so ingrained, you know, and that's fine. But I don't know if it does enough to expand the idea of some of these binaries. I don't know.
It most definitely doesn't do enough to expand it. I mean, I think the problem with this film is that all of these topics are touched upon, but they're never really explored in a way that is compelling or that overcomes the lack of the horror elements.
I did think it was interesting that slowly the three characters that to me seem to be put at the center, I mean, Jordan and Toby and Alexandra, because they're the ones that plot together. Like, you know, they're sitting there saying we're in danger. So they together are sort of like the final girl, like we're in danger. We have to leave. They make this plan to get the bus in the morning. And I thought it was really interesting that they were like, okay, you get the girls, you get the boys. Like they're compartmentalizing everyone else into boys and girls. And it's the three characters who don't fit those labels most, who are most outside of those two labels, who are sort of the heroes of the film or the protagonists of the film. I mean, I thought that was interesting. But a lot of the characters are just confined to girls and boys, even in a film that's trying to resist those labels.
And what this film does is echo a lot of the more problematic horror films that always take its LGBTQIA+ characters and make them sort of menacing in a sexual way. What's the name of the counselor?
Sarah. Yeah.
So Sarah definitely comes on to
Kim.
Predatory.
Extremely predatory, because you have an adult and a child, because I think you're like 16, 17, right?
Absolutely.
So already you're sort of leaning into what is arguably the most detrimental or destructive, right? Association 100%. That you have with...
That's not okay in any state.
No, absolutely not. And if you're trying to make these radical, inclusive statements, but you're still going to depict this antiquated bullshit trope, then...
And I get it's no different than like Robin Wood. Wasn't he the one that would always talk about repression makes a monster? So, okay, yeah. So yeah. Repression did make the monster. Like, it still fits that same category.
Yes.
But if you're really trying to make clear a message, I think maybe we could move a little further away from
that. And you got to know the history of cinema. Like, you have to know what you're doing if you're going to lean into that trope and how harmful that is to the very community that you're trying to uplift and celebrate.
Well, yeah. I mean, I read some review that said this film represents a shift from the queer killer as representative of heteronormativity. But I was like, no, the killer's queer.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Angie is clearly some sort of queer character, granted distorted and traumatized by gay conversion camp, but she's still a queer killer, right? She's not some paragon of heteronormativity.
No,
and
her
name's the same as the killer in Sleepaway Camp, which was probably purposeful. Angela was the killer.
So could we talk a little bit about the camp? Because that's where I sort of got confused as to how this movie was progressing. So we meet Owen. And at first, Owen seems sympathetic. He tries to use the right pronouns. He seems respectful of, you know, the campers may not be on the journey that he wants them to be on. And you have your first moment of the sharing circle, which obviously was just a way to get ammunition to use against the kids in therapy. But there was such a radical shift from him presenting like this veneer of sympathy and understanding versus him just going bonkers. And I know the message could be that you always have to be wary of people and their motivations, but it seemed like a very weird narrative shift for me. Did his trajectory make sense to you guys? Because it didn't really make sense to me.
I mean, I guess it's almost like any grooming behavior. You know, I'm going to kind of warm you up to me so I can get close to you, build some trust, fill a need, and then I'm going to drop it like it's hot on you. So
it just seemed like the escalation was so quick. And I mean, obviously, it's like, what, a 2-hour movie? It's going to have to be quick. But
I guess it's when people started having sex.
No, I think it precedes that because he makes them shoot the dog before they have sex.
That was this, yeah.
Was that before? And that, okay.
That was the scene where he completely kind of outed himself as who he really was. Like, all I care about is, well, that whole scene where Sarah is forcing the girls to make pies and instilling domesticity, and he is like, real men are killers. I mean, that's when he really, and you're right, like, there's not much that separates that moment from the early speech where he seems kind of more sympathetic.
I guess
there's the moment when he sends Alexandra over to the girls.
Yeah. No, to the boys.
To the boys' side.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just thinking that when you were talking, because that is
But he claims it's not about who she is or who she chooses to be, but about the fact that she deceived him. Because I think he says something like, Jordan was honest with me, but you deceived me, because she walked to the girls' side. And I guess he sees that as a moment of deception when, you know, turns out she has a male body.
Yeah. Well, she is forced to wear masculine clothes, which is what makes Jordan wear the dress.
Yeah. So there's, that's the scene that sort of presents the shift, I think. Like, when we get clued in that Owen is not the sympathetic person he was in the first scene, but it's a lot to do in that one scene before we get to sort of unleashed Owen.
See, didn't the shift really even start before Owen, though? Like, you saw them going through all their personal belongings.
Right.
They went into the camp. You saw Sarah going through their personal belongings. And you got the sense that they were trying to get fuel.
Yeah.
And definitely. Then that's when they went in with Dr. Cora. And I felt like, boy, oh, boy. Talk about a miserable, nasty, terrible person that shifted pretty quickly. I mean, she's in the position of, you know, therapist and just absolutely abuses that position instantly, and then was the dog after that? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, the dog was after that. I mean, that whole scene was so Get Out. as well. I was like, if she picks up a T, I'm just going to lose it right here. But luckily that did not happen.
I think, too, you know what? We have to also ask ourselves, does this qualify as a slasher?
No.
Because I was going to say, like, your stereotypical formula, you don't really have a final girl or a final person, per se. You don't have, I mean, think about it. In normal slashers, you have sex, you die. And these guys didn't.
Yeah.
You know, and if we all want to be included in horror movies, I guess, you know, y'all have sex, you die, I guess. I don't know. But somebody will have a problem with that, too. But I'm talking at it from horror, not politics. You know, and welcome to the club, queers. Like, we've all been getting killed for a long time in these horror movies. Same thing with women. Same thing with African Americans. You know, it's not, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. Welcome to the club.
I think, despite you're not liking the killer, I do think the killer fits the slasher mode in that it is, you know, it is someone who has sort of gender sexual distress. I mean, it was forced on them.
Yeah. Repression.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sympathetic. Wears a mask.
Slashes.
But there is no, okay, this is my main problem. There were no creative kills at all. Like, you barely saw any of the kills, and they were so quick. The only time that you really spent with somebody dying was Gabriel, which is problematic in its own right.
The electrocution.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think I would have loved it to have a really good LGBTQIA killer. Like, somebody I could stand behind and be like, that's my Jason.
So you want someone with no sort of backstory just coming in and being like...
Well, like, not like, hey, I was, you know, tortured into this.
Yeah. Well, I could give you a movie. I won't now because it'll spoil it for people. But there is a horror movie that does it. And I have such a problem with
it. Well, you have to tell us what it is.
Well, I can't tell you now because it'll spoil it for people.
So she'll tell us and not you guys.
Yeah, sorry.
We spoil everything else, but not this.
Well, but they know.
Stay tuned.
That this movie is getting spoiled. They wouldn't know that this other movie is not getting spoiled.
Okay. Well, I'm intrigued. Well, as we're wrapping up, I know the perfect scene drew some hostility on social media. Lord. Like, what did you all think about that?
High School Musical.
I laughed out loud.
Yeah, it was High School Musical.
You had Zac Efron and everything because his name's Stewie.
But you liked the landslide scene in X.
Oh, I love that scene.
I did too.
So, okay, there's a trend of obviously like having a little musical moment in horror films.
That's true. In that movie Caregiver too, I think it was. You got to do it well.
Right.
So the perfect scene was not done well.
No.
It did nothing to further the plot. It did nothing to further characterization, which is what it does do in X.
And it completely took me out of horror. Whereas I think that landslide scene in the movie X,
I identified
with her. I was just like, wow. It even made her more of a sympathetic character.
Yeah.
And I think
she gets killed.
Yes.
That's a horror movie.
All older women over a certain age be mortified that, you know, you got killed in X. Sorry.
Yeah, we just spoiled that too.
We did last time. It's all right.
Okay.
It's all good.
But I guess the reason that didn't fit in the horror movie is it is like this, I mean, it does advance the plot to some degree in that it's a moment where they all affirm their own worth. Like, you know, even when Stuart, the frat boy, sort of slides into the scene and seemingly accepts who he is, he's been the one that's been trying to deny it the most. And, okay, so that advances that plot, but that plot is not horror. I mean, it made me think, like, can you have characters who are interested in self-affirmation and a film as long as they're thin. And a film interested in affirming them, can that also be a horror movie? I mean, I had the same question about Black Christmas.
I think they can if you prioritize dread, the killer, the person that ends up at the end.
I mean, you could.
And the jump scares. Like, you have to have at least a jump scare. Like, one.
Yeah, there really wasn't. But you really couldn't kill those kids after the perfect scene.
No, you could. I wanted to.
That's the scene that made me.
I'm not hate
criming,
guys. I'm part of the community, so let me just say that. But I was over those kids. I think that my generational Gwen took over, and I was like, get off my lawn.
I will say, in all honesty, this film really made me feel that generational divide.
Yeah, maybe we need somebody younger on this with us once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think for a musical interlude to work, it has to be tonally right. Mm-hmm. And this was not the reason Landslide works is because it is a quieter moment. I don't think this advances the plot. I mean, I guess I could see that argument, but it felt like it just sort of, it's what you always expect to see in LGBT movies, is you always see this sort of celebratory scene.
Cue the ABBA music.
Yeah. And I don't know. This is an interesting movie for how it both like violates traditional depictions and also leans into like some of the worst of them.
I almost would have liked to have seen a straight person in this film. Like somebody that was just...
Well, I think Kevin Bacon is.
Do you think... I got the sense that he was still somebody that came through the camp. Maybe he was from the family that started this.
The family and he just liked torturing.
Because again, it also makes it seem as if you're an island.
Right.
And that's not always the case. Now, I'm not saying they should be saved by the straight person. You know, not one of those kind of moments. But just, it would have been interesting to have, like, what if you had somebody in there that was pretending to be gay so that they could get in and, you know, expose conversion camps. And I don't know. There's so many missed moments. I guess I can't list them all.
Which you did find out that one of the characters is there to expose, but they're a member of the community.
But that would have been interesting to say, like, you know what? A lot of people got your back. At the end of the day, I think we just want to see horror. And I think that maybe that's the horror fan versus the political fan.
I read something really good by Logan Ashley Kistner, and I'll link to it in the show notes, but they go through a listing of all the films that have a trans character and how problematic that has been historically. So films include A Reflection of Fear from 1973, Unhinged, 1982, Sleepaway Camp, 1983, Fatal Games, 1984, Silence of the Lambs, 1991. It goes on and on. And in the lion's share of those, the depiction is othered in the worst possible way. Mm-hmm. Othered as like violent, othered as sexually predatory. The one thing that this film does do that's positive is it gives us the opposite of that. So it is positive in that respect. And is it worth having a movie like this that dials down the horror elements to at least get that character template established? I think maybe that's what this film does. It's only a little bit horror, but I think that alone is enough to make it like worthy within the horror canon.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think this is worthy within the horror canon for quite a few reasons, and that's one of them. I mean, I'm not saying I enjoyed watching it. I'm not saying I think it's a particularly good horror movie. I think it's one that I would come back to and maybe even like include in a class because of what it's doing that's different, including completely breaking the mold with the trans characters.
I agree with that.
I mean, has there ever been a positive trans depiction in a horror movie?
Although, are there ever really great positive depictions of anybody in horror films?
That's a good point.
Because I'm trying to think. It doesn't do a lot for even, you know, traditional positions of privilege. Like, so you're middle class, upper class, white guy, because they're all bros. You know, they all just get drunk and party and, you know, rape girls and then die.
Yeah.
So they don't fare very well. You know, you have killers with mommy issues. They're pedophiles.
Yeah,
you know,
horror films are not about.
Yeah.
They're not about positive representation, except I think with
Final
women.
Girls. Final girls are all right.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. The increasingly sort of complex final girl representation, which I do see Jordan as kind of an evolution of.
Yeah.
Though I totally agree with your point that there doesn't seem to be a final girl because everyone survives.
Yeah.
So
do we have a favorite character?
I liked Alexandra a lot. And I think my feelings on this film would have been different if we had followed her trajectory.
I agree with that.
Because I really liked her. And I thought they did a lot of interesting work with her subtly. Like in terms of character building, I think she was one of the more nuanced characters.
I agree with that. I'll second that, but I'm also going to add on to it, because as I sit here and I look at my list of names that you so kindly gave to me, because I'm terrible with names.
Same.
I loved Gabriel, because...
Okay. Insert cricket sounds. Yeah.
I think there's something unapologetic about Gabriel. Mm. I feel like you never get any sense what binary that Gabriel falls into. Like, you might get the pronoun, although I don't even know if they really get into the pronoun.
I don't think they do.
But I'm just going to use his for now because that was the house that he ended up in, and that's what I feel that he might have fallen into. He's so equally beautiful and handsome. At times he looks so feminine, and other times he looks so masculine. And I think that he would have made an amazing killer.
That's true. Maybe maybe Gabriel should have been the killer.
Gabriel literally was like, you are either predator or prey.
Yeah.
I've made my choice. I'm sticking to it. Hey, I don't care who you are. Because I'm staying alive.
Well, you know what? I mean, Gabriel is the one person who does kind of escape the prison of identity politics in some ways.
And he gets to have pleasurable sex.
That would have made him a good killer, yeah.
Nobody in horror movies ever gets to have, like, pleasurable, seemingly consensual sex.
And not get killed at the end of it.
Right. And I don't know. There was just something appealing to that character. Although, again, Alexandra is definitely my favorite. But in the horror sense, I think Gabriel was the one that actually somewhat challenged things a little bit more.
Yeah, right. It's interesting. In terms of how Gabriel identified, there's the one moment before he has sex with Stu where they're in the lake or whatever, and Stu says something like, you look like a girl. And Gabriel says, no, I don't.
Yeah.
And that's like all he says about his identity, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Ooh, maybe you're right. Maybe Gabriel is the most interesting character.
The more thought-provoking one of all of them.
Yeah, definitely the one you'd want the backstory of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like Jordan the best. I mean, I liked Alexandra, but she seemed a little one-note. Like, always, I know who I am. I'm great. You need to love who you are. Jordan, I mean, it was a little kind of...
conflicted.
They were a little conflicted, but it seemed a little bit rote. It's like, okay, I'm going to have this little mini crisis when I'm talking to the doctor, but
they cue one tear
it.
Rolling down.
Yeah, gotta love the single
tear. They were lying in bed, and then they sang perfect, and they were fine. So,
such is the power of pink.
Yeah.
So, do we now think that we would recommend it? I still would not recommend this to people because it's just not a good movie.
That, you wouldn't recommend it.
I recommend The Amazing Conversation I Had with Great People. I
would recommend the film too.
I mean, the fact that I got it for free on Peacock, I guess I can't be mad at it.
Right.
You know? So, hey, if you already have Peacock, cool. Watch it, see what you think, let us know. But if you don't have Peacock, I don't know, save the $5.
Yeah, but you can have a trial. Yeah.
There you go. Get the free trial and then immediately.
Yeah. And there's a lot of other WWF archives on there too. So I'm just saying, there's a little something for everybody.
There is a lot of really good, like, Dateline on there.
Oh, I'm a Peacock fan now. This movie converted me.
You're a fan of what?
Peacock?
Could you repeat that for me? So you're saying live that you prefer Peacock? Is that to Hulu? To Netflix? I just figured it would be timely.
I think the offerings on Peacock are a lot better.
What are you offering? Please do not edit that out.
I won't. I'll leave it at all in.
Sleepaway Camp is on Peacock.
Yes.
So
I wish I could have a drink every time somebody said Peacock.
You are such a 12-year-old boy.
I am. I do identify as that. I have the skin of a 12-year-old boy, too. I'll tell you. My pores, you can drive a truck through them.
Wow.
Sorry to the 12-year-old boys out there.
We clearly need video.
I know. I held it all in this long, and now I'm just, you
know. Gotta let it out. Gotta let. Should we sing perfect?
Oh, God.
Well, I guess that's all for us. Unless anybody has any more comments, gripes, observations. No? Okay.
No, but I would recommend it. Yes.
Dawn Stands Alone.
That's how we'll end it then. I stand alone.
Okay. Well, that's it for us. If you have any comments about they/them, I think we would all really be interested in hearing them.
Yep.
Because this is going to be a divisive film, and we just love to hear different opinions, especially if they're in contrast to our own. You can find us on All Things Horror Homeroom, and I guess we will be back at some point. We like to keep it loose. But we will be back. And
you heard it here. Liz
listening.
Is loose. Watching Peacock. All right. You guys have a fantastic day.
Bye.